Show. Recorded live.
All right, good evening, everybody. Quite a few things have been happening over the past few days. First of all, we did finally file our gun lawsuit, our Second Amendment lawsuit. Filed it up at the New York State Supreme Court up in Albany County this afternoon. We also, a couple of things on that. First of all, we did go through this and back and forth, really trying to work all the bugs out of this lawsuit. I think we got them. But like anything else, there's quite a few pages. I think this ended up being about 49 pages. If you want to read it or download it, you can go up to newyorkcommittyman.org and click on, the gun control lawsuit page. Make sure you refresh your pages to see the latest, and you'll see on the top, close to the top, click here to read our Second Amendment action at law. This filing that you're going to read right here is about 96 pages or something like that, 94 pages. It includes the entire case that we filed. It includes we did a cover sheet on this. We did a table of contents. Then, of course, the complaint itself or the action at law itself. The action itself, I think, was about 48 pages. Then after that, we have the law of the case, 17 pages. Then after that, we have the affidavits. I believe we had 9 affidavits. If anybody else wants to put an affidavit in, they can do one. You can get a sample one up on our line right on the same page. And we'll be filing some more stuff maybe in the next couple of weeks because we're still getting signatures. So we did get a little over 800. I think it was like 808 or 812 signatures altogether. People signed up onto the lawsuit. We're going to push for some more. Hopefully we can find another 100 or two. I'd like to hit that 1,000 mark, if possible. We did file for a conference, so we should be hearing from them shortly, probably a couple of days, and we should get a date, probably about 10 days from now, roughly speaking. And we do want to get as many people as possible up to this conference. This will be the most important part of the whole thing is the first conference, because we're going to set the mode and the process of this court case. And so as many people as possible is very important for this particular day. So we'll let everyone know when that will be. Anybody that is not signed up on our, joined up on our meetup, up on newyorkcommittyman.org, up on the top right, I think it is, you'll see a button, join. So you should join there. The emails, there's not too much of a conversation that goes on that, but from time to time we do get a conversation. And of course, we put out important information through that, so it's a good place to get informed. But there's not too much email that goes through there, so it shouldn't, fill up people's boxes with conversation. Also, with the meetup groups, when you sign up and you get the email, of course, your email is your email address is not shared with anyone. They have to go through the process and in through the meetup group to talk to each other. So everybody sees the same mail, but nobody gets anybody else's email addresses. And as many of us that have joined these meetups, you can decide on how you want to get your email. You can get if there was 6 emails that went out throughout the day, you can get them as they happen, or you can click a few buttons here or there and just get one email a day. So all 6 will go out into one email. And you can read them in chronological order. But one of the most important parts, I think, or aspects of this program on Meetup is that you can sign up for text messaging. So that's especially good when we do something like having a court hearing, and we can keep people informed. If at the last minute it was changed or something happened, we can text message everybody. Just by sending out the text message through the meetup group, it also gives you text messaging and reminders of whatever events is coming up the day of the event. I think it's about 2 hours before. You see, I got mine at 5 today for tonight's program, and I was set up at 7:30. So 6, 7, or 2.5. So 2.5 hours before whatever event you kind of get that. So you can sign up for that. We do have instructions on that, I think, up on that page, in the gun lawsuit page. If we don't, I'll get it up there. Which, by the way, we're going to redesign that page now because we've got a lot of other activities going on. And we discovered recently that our sheriffs are in jeopardy now. These people are moving very quickly. We do know, let's just look at the states in general. Alaska does not have sheriffs. I don't know if they ever have had sheriffs. They may not have, but they don't have any sheriffs. Connecticut used to have sheriffs, but they got rid of their sheriffs. I don't know when. We're looking into that to find out exactly when they did get rid of their sheriffs. I did go up and pull down their constitution, and in their Connecticut state constitution, it was absolutely crystal clear that the Constitution says that a sheriff shall be elected, one for each county. So I don't know how they got around that, but they did. And I'd like to talk to someone from Connecticut, and maybe we can get some people in Connecticut that'll spearhead a lawsuit. We'll write it for them, and we'll come out, and we can join that lawsuit with them, and we can speak on their behalf. But we do need people from Connecticut to actually spearhead it, and we'll do that. I think it's important that they do. Here in New York, there's one other state, Delaware. Delaware just last year got rid of their sheriffs, and they moved the control of whatever the sheriff had control of to the attorney general, and that's really frightening because the attorney general works directly and with the governor of that state, just like he does in our state. And they're lawyers, and then they're being given deputies, I guess, to do the sheriff's normal job. So you're going to get a flurry of lawyers coming out instead of deputies that have a law enforcement background working for a sheriff. You're now going to have a bunch of lawyer cops coming out after you, working directly for the attorney general, who works directly underneath the governor. I understand that Biden's son is the attorney general of that state. So that all is very interesting and frightening at the same time. Here in New York, we have a serious problem. As you know, there's gun problems going on. I heard an announcement here tonight on someone in the room mentioned that, I think it was Chris, that mentioned that half of the counties have written up resolutions concerning the SAFE Act, demanding, I guess, either or, to change it or to appeal it. Maybe someone who knows more about that could talk about that when we open up the mics. And I understand there's another half, most of the other half of the counties are working on resolutions. So we'll see where all that goes. So there's a lot of resistance to this. I did see someone send me a copy of a newspaper that made notes concerning some of the lawsuits and the appeals and some of the problems concerning the SAFE Act. And, of course, we filed ours. I talked with Gerard. He's going to hopefully look into, or if anybody else wants to do this, maybe send copies of our lawsuit to different news medias and see if we can get some traction there. So anybody who wants to do that could just go do that. Just download it and send a copy to the your local medias or whoever. ours is an interesting case, of course, being common law. So if they were to print any of that stuff, it would become an education. You know, after writing this particular lawsuit, if anybody really wants to understand liberty and get an education in liberty, I think this lawsuit would give it to you. It really brings out how clear it is what liberty is. It talks a lot about how statutes are not law, and that the law of the land are the constitutions and the Magna Carta and the Declaration of Independence and the Bible, ultimately, maxims. That's law. That's common law. But anyway, Hopefully people will read it. Maybe we can get it into the newspaper. Maybe they'll print some of it. It would be great if they printed all of it, or at least the first part of it, which is the it's quite a few pages. But, you know, being a lot of pages, you know, it's double-spaced. So, I mean, if we were to consolidate that and put it in a regular paper, I'm sure we'd get it done, goodness, and tighten it up. We could probably have that whole thing in 5 or 10 pages at most. But being, you know, for the court case, it's got to be large font. It's got to be spread out. It's got to be narrowed in margins around the whole, you know, like I believe it's 1 inch around the whole thing. And double-spaced and so on. So, but it does make for easier reading. You can get through a page relatively quick. But everyone should read this lawsuit. Getting back to the sheriffs. Here in New York State, we have a very serious problem. Again, we just we're working with the SAFE Act, trying to get rid of that, to appeal that. And our point of view and perspective is that we want to get rid of all gun laws because it's unconstitutional. And even more than that, it violates our unalienable rights, the right to defend ourselves. And these people just want to legislate our behavior. And that's exactly what statutes do. And so, you know, again, we're looking to get rid of all gun control. I think it's a subsection, a penal code 265 and a New York State penal code law. They call it law. I think it's 400 and then, of course, the SAFE Act. There's also code 35. I read through that, and I'm going to read through that again. I didn't necessarily see a problem with that. So I didn't add that into our complaint, but I'm going to go back and reread that and make sure it may be something we might want to think about. Now, moving on to the sheriffs, getting back to New York State. When we went up to Greene County and we listened to the sheriff up there talk, he mentioned that the sheriffs were in jeopardy. They already, I think it's in the SAFE Act that they already put some funding out or were preparing to put some funding out for the process of moving all of the control of the permits to the state police. Now, the state police is run by a superintendent who was appointed probably by the governor, I would presume. I'm pretty sure that is the case. I think I asked John Wallace this, and he was a state police colonel, I think it was. And he's the one who told me it was superintendent, and I'm pretty sure he confirmed that that they appointed by the governor, which makes it very interesting. The governor wants to get rid of our guns, move it to the state police, and he appoints the superintendent, and guess what happens next? Well, I did hear, and I think maybe Gerard knows more about this, maybe he can talk about it when he gets on the mic, I did hear that the superintendent made a statement concerning this and said that if he was ordered to confiscate guns, he would have no problem. So that's where we're heading, folks, and we better be careful. So what's the future of our sheriffs? There is talk in the background. I think the sheriff mentioned that they were looking, he mentioned they were looking to get rid of the sheriff here in New York. But I did hear this in a couple of places. You know, no place that I can put my finger on and say, hey, it's absolute. But you know what? There's no doubt that that's where they're moving anyway. They'd love to get rid of the sheriff because they have to deal with 62 independent elected individuals who could be put under the pressure. You know, they're political animals, yeah, but they're not as great a political animal as the legislators who's in the corrupt hive day in and day out. The sheriff pretty much is, you know, he's got a political connection, but he doesn't rest and live in that hive of insanity and that makes these people insane, ultimately. But I could see how the sheriff is a problem for them. And so getting the guns out of their hands is great. And getting rid of our sheriffs is even greater for them because then there is no resistance or protection of the people when they bring in their little New World Order. And, of course, if they get rid of our guns and they get rid of our sheriffs, game over. We're done. But I was looking here in New York State. We do have a constitution in New York State, and thankfully, New York State Constitution is very clear also. that a sheriff shall be elected, one for every county. And the only power the legislator has over that is whether they want that term to be 3 years or 4 years. And it might even have been 2 years, or 3 years or 4 years, and maybe as long as 6 years. So I don't know exactly what the term is for a sheriff. We'll have to look into that, and we should know. But that's about the only authority the legislators have the right concerning that. Now, here is the problem. In New York City, we have one sheriff for five boroughs. That's five counties. And I wondered why that was the case. Not long ago, I found out that that sheriff is not elected, that he's actually appointed by the mayor. I wonder how they got around that one. I wonder how come nobody ever noticed that. First of all, that there's one sheriff for five counties. I guess it's a lot easier to control the city with one person. And then you have the elitist mayor down there in control who chooses that sheriff and control of that sheriff, who's really in. And you know they're not going to put a mayor, they're not going to allow a mayor to be elected down in New York City that isn't got tight connection with the governor, and they need to be on the same page. And these guys seem to be cut from the same cloth, so there's no doubt about it. They can control the city. But how did they get away with this? I have not explored this yet, but I'm kind of trying to get someone to do the investigation on it and, you know, bring their information to me, and then we'll sit down and go through, see what we can, what we're going to put together. But we have to launch another lawsuit. They're also in the county of Westchester, does not have an elected sheriff. I don't know who appoints that individual, but that's the facts. I also found out that the county of Nassau does not have an elected sheriff. So we have seven counties in the state of New York who do not have elected sheriffs, and the sheriffs that are in place are controlled politically by somebody. In the case of New York City, we know it's the mayor. What's interesting about that guy, he doesn't even look like a sheriff. He looks just like a lawyer. And this guy's from Washington. He's got a very deep background in, ATF. Isn't that interesting? Probably the worst police force of the world, the ATF. So that's his background, and that's what's protecting New York City. So we have a problem. So I think right now it's time to launch another lawsuit, hopefully in the next few weeks, depending on how long it takes to do all of the historical investigation, get our facts straight, and then put together a case and file it, and hopefully we can get 1,000 people in that too. Because these people are moving so quickly, and they bring this before the legislature, and before you know, they voted on it, it's done, and it's over with. Well, we need to get ahead of the game. That's why we have to do something with the sheriffs now. We can't let it sit. All right, so that's that. We can talk some more about that when we open up the lines here. So a third thing is, over the weekend, we got a decision, a memorandum and order. It's dated, decided and entered, dated February 28th from the appellate court on our case. And we read through it very carefully, and they did not rule for us. We were kind of at first shocked. And as we looked through this paper and read through the paper, again, there was a lot of poison that got into this particular case, which was filed in 2011. They defaulted, and yet they still got all their information into the case. And judges, I presume, I doubt the judges wrote it, the clerks wrote it. So they read all this stuff that was in the case that was not supposed to be in the case. We objected all the way through, but that's okay. Anyway, we went through this and tried to decipher. And I think we have to retract what we first thought. We kind of first thought that these people would understand this, first of all, but would really look at this and make the right decision and so on and so forth, and that they would understand what was going on. After reading this paper a couple of times, and I actually analyzed it line by line and really tried to understand the mind behind whoever wrote this, it became clear to me that whoever wrote this did not read our case. They did not have a clue. So they did not read our case. And then we thought more and more about this. On one hand, this could be good because that means they still don't see us coming. But in any event, then we started to realize that probably the clerk wrote this. You see, because this is nothing important. This is not important to them. This particular case, as far as they were concerned, was party bickering. It was not what it really was. It was a huge case that could change the entire direction of our entire nation and put it on the right track and literally potentially have the possibility of saving this nation, because New York would be able to take control of itself. The people of New York would be able to take control of the political process for the first time in at least 70 or 80 or even 100 years. So anyway, I went in and looked at the rules. And it gave us the ability in there to resubmit for re-argument. So we did resubmit for re-argument. I wrote that over the weekend. Gerard and I went through it back and forth, and I think we hammered out a really good paper. It's very short, I think 9 pages. That also is available up online on our court case. The New York State Board of Election court case for 2011. Let me open that up, and I'll navigate people to that area so they can download that too. If you go to, People versus the New York State Board of Election on the left side, and click on that, you will then be able to read on our, this is our latest case, the one that's pending right now for writ of mandamus before the appellate court. But if you look on here, as you come down to the bottom of all of the papers, you'll see to read the first lawsuit filed 11-16-11, now an appeal, click here. So if you click that, you will get to the page where we have all of the papers that were filed and received for that particular case. And all the way down on the bottom, you'll see the appellate court decision, and you will see the re-argument papers that we filed. People can click on that. If you click on that, here it is. It does show up. And you can get the copy of the case, and you can download that and so on. It does open up in this page. I'll fix that after I get off, after we end this program tonight. I'll fix it so it opens up in another tab and it doesn't take control of the page that you're on. But it's a PDF. We hammered out a paper. We went back and forth. And it became clear that they do not understand our case. The other possibility could be that they did understand our case and they believe they didn't understand our case. That's a possibility. Our re-argument papers will make it clear to them what our case is. I think we hammered out a pretty good paper over the weekend. We've made it more in their face and more obvious that I think we were very clear in that paper. We intend on taking Teresi to the federal court as soon as we can. More important is to focus in on the cases we have going to stop these people and to get our rights back, take control of the judicial process from that end. So we're not in a big rush to sue Teresi, but we definitely are going to do it. And the big focus of Teresi is going to be criminal, in my opinion. We'll have to hammer that out also. It definitely would be criminal and civil. I've always thought more on the civil side and less on the criminal side, but I think it's time for people to go to jail. And they don't have to go to jail for a long time, even if it's 7 days. They got to go to jail. We're not going to stop this until people realize that they're going to go to jail every time they violate people, and especially judges. If all people, judges, violating our constitutional rights, well, let me rephrase that, violation of unalienable rights as defined by the Constitution. We did make that absolutely clear, I think, in our papers. That was our intention, that we're in that process of doing that because he violated the U.S. Code. I think we made it pretty clear we're going to do the same thing to those guys if they do the same thing, because they agreed that there was no cause of action. And once we laid this out, the new papers, I think it's crystal clear. I think it was crystal clear in the other ones anyway, but this is even much more crystal clear, in my opinion, the re-argument. And, you know, every one of our causes of actions, which we had five, they claimed each and every one of them were not a cause of action. But each one of those focused in on the breaking of a law. So they ignored that. That's why I don't believe they read it. They had their clerks do it. And I think, well, there's no doubt about their clerks being political. Their clerks are definitely political. They are definitely gatekeepers up there in the appellate court. I can tell you that from experience, the way they treated us, the way they lied to us. In my research, I found out, and I don't know how many people up there I talked with, I said, look, we're putting a writ of mandamus in. This is on our second case. There's got to be an emergency process. Oh, no, there's nothing, you know, you have to file the papers the way you have to file it, and it's got to go through the process, and you have to do a brief, and it's just like an appeal, and you got to pay the money, and you blah, 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 and on and on and on and on and on. As a matter of fact, I want my money back. I'm going to let them know next time I go up there. They lied to us. They lied to us. I did find, you know, we sent a letter of dishonor to the Chief Justice up here in New York in the 3rd District, and we have not heard back from her, and we gave her 5 days. They have not responded. It's been over 5 days now. It must be about 7 or 8 days or something. It was last week. I think the end of last week would have been 5 days. So we have to deal with that and go back after them on that. But on that paper, we also filed that that we need to push our case forward, and it's supposed to take precedence over all civil cases, because there is federal law and a federal procedure. So we kicked in the federal procedure here in the state. And federal law trumps state law, by the way. So we haven't heard back from them on that. But again, like I said, over the weekend in our research, we found that there is a process that is an emergency process for an extraordinary writ that can bring you through the system, and they're supposed to push you through quickly. And they did not do it, okay? What's nice about this re-argument, it's set up with a fast-paced thing. We filed the papers. If you give it to them personally, if you serve them personally with the papers, you have to give them 8 days. Now, 8 days, when you go the 8 days, then you take the next Monday and you set your date for that. Well, that puts us 2 Mondays from now. And then I looked at serving the papers through the mail, and you had to give them, I think it was 13 days or 12 days, something like that. And so I figured, well, okay, we'll go through the mail because it's a lot quicker, it's cheaper, and we're going to hit the second Monday anyway. So that's where we're at. They do have a quick process for the reconsideration and re-argument. The only qualifications for re-argument is if you can show them that they, you know, clearly and obviously made a huge perceptional mistake, that they perceived something that wasn't, and something of that nature in 2 or 3 different ways, however that was. I'd have to go look up what the rule is. But we qualified easily. They really, absolutely, clearly thought this was when you read this paper, it's like, wow. By the way, we have a copy of this paper up there, too. Okay? Hang on a minute. We have a copy of this paper up there, and which is the memorandum of order, an order right before the reconsideration for the argument. So you can read both of them. What else do I have to say about this? I guess there's not much more to say about it. Only that they lied to us. I'm going to write another paper on that, and we're going to go forward. Now, one other thing. I was talking with one of the guys that we work with here in our area. His name is Ryan, and he came up with an interesting idea. He says, why don't we go get an order of protection from the police? And wow, did that ring a bell, you know? I know that there is a list on the federal level, and I know there's a list on the state level. And I've also, you know, and that list is a list of people who have diplomatic immunity, okay? And in order to get on that list, it's hard to get onto that list, I heard, particularly in the federal. And I didn't know. I have to look further into this. But on the state, it's a little easier, okay? And you can get on that list ultimately. There's a couple of ways to get on the list, but a lot of judges wouldn't understand it. So, you know, it'd be a hit and miss throughout the state. But one way you can get on that list is to sue a government agency for violating your unalienable rights using statutes. And then through that process, you can, through the wherefore clause, require that they protect you from these people, and they put you onto an immunity list, a diplomatic immunity. Well, this whole idea of getting an order of protection from the police, from the swarms of officers sent out by all these courts, all these Nisi Prius courts, in order to inflict us and to damage us and to assault us out on the highways under U.S. Code 1842, and I got the vision. I said, yeah, that's a great idea. So we're going to investigate that, and I don't think there's going to be much to it. It's going to be going to the federal courts for an order of protection, and ultimately the end result is to get onto it's a diplomatic immunity list, which says do not detain and do not question. Okay, so if you get pulled over by a police officer and he runs your license, he'll get a little message, do not detain and do not question, and he'll come back to your license and have a nice day. This is what we've heard. And so I think this is a process to get onto that. And so when we launch that one, anybody that wants to jump into that one, you know, if we can get 800 people or 1,000 people, that'd be great. I would think we'd get 1,000,000 people. I mean, we just got to get the word out. But this is one way to fight back. This is one way to fight. You could strap a gun on your side and walk with immunity. You can exercise all your constitutional rights. And they live with that, one or two here or there. They're not happy with that, but it is what it is until the Nazis completely take over or the Marxists. It is what it is. But the way they control us is through statutes. And as long as we obey statutes, we're going to be taken into the Iron Fist. We have to rebel now. We have to just say no now. We have to resist their jurisdiction now. This looks like a really good way to do it. If we can get 1,000 people to do that, and then they tell other people, and other people, I'll write another paper for another 1,000 people, another 1,000 people, another 1,000 people. You know, I could hope that it could get like that. But anyway, that's something we'll talk about also today when we open the mics. All right, so I think that's it. The gun lawsuit, the New York State Board of Election movement through, lawsuit moving through, the re-argument. Even if they still discharge this case from this level, which I'd be very, very surprised if they do. I've been surprised anyway. I've been getting surprised a lot, so maybe they will. But if they do, you know, there are other levels. The Court of Appeals is the next step up, and then we take it to the feds. And I think the Fed, maybe we should jump straight to the feds. We'll talk about that too, because we might be able to get better results on the feds. The only reason I would want to go to the appellate court of appeals first is because that gives us that extra step. Once we overstep them and go to the feds, then we lose that opportunity. It's just another opportunity of a group of judges that might see the light and do the right thing. The paper they wrote gave them the ability to sidestep the case and get out of it without having to upset the status quo of case law, which is good status quo, by the way. Now with the new paper, they have the two questions they have to ask. Well, they have the two things that they could do, but the question that they have to ask themselves, okay, if we don't listen to the re-argument, we're going to get overturned if they put this paper through the way we just wrote it up and take it to the Court of Appeals. And judges don't like to get overturned, especially appellate court judges. That's one thing. If they hear it, okay, and reconsider it, then they have to talk about what we put in that paper. We stuck on point on that paper. There's, you know, they have to give that side that we put down there. And we made it very clear that they were violating election law 42, not election law, that they were violating U.S. Code 42-1985, I think it is, which is interfering with a an individual campaigning for office, which gives up to a 2-year jail sentence for anybody who interferes with that, and a $5,000 fine. Plus, there's a civil side to that, so you can go and sue them civilly for a lot of mucho. So, all right. Anyway, that's pretty much the update. That's where we're at. I'm going to open the mics in a second. Next week, we're going to embark on, unless something else comes up that takes precedence, but we're going to embark on looking a little bit at the anatomy of a court case. So we'll look at the complaint, what makes up the complaint, how it's structured, how it's formed, what are the required elements, and what is the paperwork involved with it. You know, what do you need to file, and what forms do you need? You know, we want to go through that, and we'll just over the weeks we'll do piece by piece, so that hopefully people listening to these tapes, they can then learn through them also on how to file their own cases. But people need to get involved on their county levels. You need to get a support group going. You need to study and work these things out and spearhead all of these things that we're doing in your own counties. And we have to push against these people. We've got to push back and challenge their jurisdictions, which they do not have. Okay. Let me see here a second. All right, with that, I'm going to open the mics up, unmute all. Okay, mics are open. If you have any background noise, mute your own mic. But anyway, mic is open. Questions, comments, answers, question, comments, or whatever.
Hey, John, Carl.
Yeah, how you doing, Carl?
Good. I don't know if I missed this, but you're claiming diplomatic... Sorry, you're getting an order of protection for diplomatic immunity, and what's the, cause? What's the complaint? How do you go about it?
Oh, well, very clearly, I've been trying to get a gun permit, and I haven't gotten one. It's my paperwork's been in there for 12, 13, 14, 15 or 16 months, and now, I called a couple of weeks ago, he said... you know, the detective in charge said, well, 3 days, you know, we'll have something out to you. But they also slipped on why they didn't do it. It was a personal thing. They violated my rights. They pulled me aside and purposely held back my permit. So that's one thing. The other, someone's bleeding through, by the way. So keep your, you know, mute yourself if there's background noise or something. You know, the ultimate thing is I want to be able to carry a gun, and I don't think I need a permit. And I know if I do carry a gun and I get caught, I could end up in jail for a year or 2 years, especially in New York City for 2 years. I don't think I should need a driver's license to drive a automobile. I will keep a driver's license just in case I decide to drive a motor vehicle, so I'll always have one of them anyway. But nevertheless, I shouldn't be able to have to deal with all these problems that people deal with for driving. You know, we have right of travel, and we can list 10,000 things that we're unable to do. I cannot buy a gun. Okay, I was going to go to Vermont or Massachusetts or some state, Pennsylvania, right? But I have to be a resident of that state because I have to show ID. When I show them my New York ID, they're not going to sell me a gun. I can't find any gun store in New York State that'll sell me a gun. I can't find anyone in the streets that'll sell me a gun. I can't get a handgun. I got a problem. So what do I do? I mean, my rights are being violated. So that's why I'm going for an order of protection.
Listen, the short answer to that, Carl, Are you there?
Yes, yes.
The short answer to that is the New York State Constitution doesn't have a specific Second Amendment right. The federal Constitution absolutely trumps the, you know, on our rights. In other words, it's in the federal, so that's what we go on. So based on the fact that we have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, and that New York State has no Second Amendment right within their Constitution, they do have it codified in a statute that you have a right to keep arms, but it's still a statute. So you file an order of protection against all the police forces in New York State because
no, throughout the whole entire country.
Well, it didn't. You could do
that's
the
what
entire.
We're going to have to do it. The entire country.
Well,
I want to travel.
Right, you could do the entire country. It's not necessary in the entire country because there are states that let you carry a gun with no permit. But anyway,
there are states that won't.
Right. I mean, you could do it in the entire country, but the simple part is that New York State is saying that you can't. You understand? So they're violating your Second Amendment rights, and if you get pulled over in New York State, I mean, you could word it in any state that violates your right, your federal right, you know. New York State is a little stronger because it's not in our, you know, it's not in our Constitution, so we definitely can kick back to the federal one, you know what I mean? Because certain things are left up to the states to decide. And since there's nothing in our Constitution, then the federal one holds up, right?
Yeah, yeah. If they don't say anything negative about it, right, that means the feds.
Right, so they really can't violate your Second Amendment right, even though they do. And there has been some Supreme Court rulings that say reasonable restriction. Well, what the hell is reasonable? Who decides that? But the order of protection would go along the lines that New York State has no provisions and they are violating your Second Amendment rights, and therefore you need an order of protection against the police when they pull you over.
Right.
You know, if you could get that nationally, that would be great. I don't know that they would give you that.
Well, it's a federal thing, so we're looking for a federal decision. So it would you know, be the same in all the states. But, you know, the other thing is that they confuse us with subjects. When they pull a people over, they can't see the difference between a people and a subject, and they treat us like subjects. And when you try to tell them, well, excuse me, you know, you don't have the authority to do that, so on and so forth, I'm one of the people, they don't understand that. So this is a major problem. And this is an education. This was caused by the government because they took over our educational process and they've robbed this from the people. And they've made us all statute-abiding citizens. Oh, did I say that? I mean law-abiding citizens. Anyway, statute-abiding citizens. And we, silly people, we went along with all that. We allowed our behavior to be legislated. You know, let me tell you something that happened to me over this past weekend. It happened to me on Friday. It actually happened to my wife on Friday. My wife went through a number of operations over the past 3 years, and she's in a lot of pain, so she's on pain medications. And she's been on oxycodone. And this isn't good for you to be on, especially long-term. And she's been on it for 3 years. And the pain level had gotten so bad, she had gotten up to about 180 of these pills a month. So she was taking like six a day or something like that. And but it started causing other problems. And she knew she had to get off, so she started to reduce. And we started to work out something with the doctor to reduce her to see how much pain level she can endure without the narcotics. And maybe find something natural and a few other things. In any event, we got down to 90. She's down to 90 pills a month, which is huge. Jumped. It's more than cut it in half. Okay? Well, this past, step down, she had a little problems. And, she took a couple extra pills, so she was short a few days. Okay? So we went to the doctor and a little early. And they wrote the prescription early, 5 days early. And actually 3 days. And, well, 5 days on paper, but 3 days literally. Anyway, they wrote the paper, 5 days. She wrote the paper for, to be refilled. And when the pharmacist took it and ran it through the computer, they got an alert, and this is from the state government, which prevented the prescription from going through. And I, you know, when I talk with the pharmacist, he says, well, you know, it's 90 pills a month, and, you know, this is 5 days early. They won't allow it. So who's they? And they said it was the state. I forget, it was narcotics control or something like that.
It's a federal law, John.
Well, it's federal, but it's state controlled, okay? Because I called the feds up first, and they gave me the state that actually controls this, the state number. So I called the state number up, and I got an investigator. He wasn't available. I left a message. I said, you need to call me right away. But he called me today, Monday morning, and I had a conversation with him. And this guy says, well, yeah, it's the law. I said, well, wait a second, let me get this straight. The federal government is getting in between my wife and her doctor. And I explained to him that my wife is being reduced on a narcotics, which is legal because it's for pain. And, it, you know, things aren't a perfect science here. And she needed a little more this month because she couldn't get down to that 90 mark. And then the government steps in and says you can't do it, and then tells the doctor that the doctor can't do it. Oh, yeah, it's the law. That's all I got from this guy. It's the law. Now, it's a lawsuit that I want to go forward with, but I haven't got the time at the moment. But I'm going to sue these people. I'm going to sue the government on that level, too, these people controlling our lives. But that's how bad it is. The government is controlling all aspects of our life, even getting in between you and your doctor. And these are statutes, and these people believe it's the law. It has no application upon me. But they can't tell the difference between a subject and a people. And that's why we need an order of protection to let them know we're the people. We have diplomatic immunity. That's not law to us. It has nothing to do with us. Leave us alone. And anybody else who wants to do that can become a people just by saying the same thing, and you become a people that day.
You know,
until then, you're a subject.
You said that the when the cops pull us over, they treat us like subjects, which is true. But when you get to court, they don't automatically treat you as a subject, because the system has you arraigned, and at your arraignment, they ask you, you know, how do you plead, innocent, guilty? Do you understand? Meaning, do you stand under? And that's all designed in there to determine if you're a subject or a people. Now, the judges are ignorant, but the reason they put that in there is because we don't have a stamp on our head that says a people or a citizen.
So, maybe we should do that.
Well, and so, but think about it. They're asking you, do you understand, which means do you stand under. So there is a provision for being a people. You say, no, I don't understand. I don't stand under. And no, I'm not a citizen. I'm a people, and you don't have jurisdiction over me. So that whole arraignment process is designed to determine who you are, whether the judge knows it or not. That's the.
But they're not happy with the answer.
Well, regardless of whether they're happy with the answer, they have to ask it. And they also understand that if you don't give it, they got a problem. Look what happened when Ryan wouldn't answer. They didn't know what to do, did they?
Yeah.
Because
they
didn't give them the other half of the equation. Do you understand? No, I don't understand. I don't stand under. And you don't have jurisdiction over me. You haven't established, you know, this personal jurisdiction.
Right. Yeah. We see that this is, you know, the judges don't understand what we're talking about. They don't understand our challenge in jurisdiction. They don't understand the fact that we're saying that it doesn't apply to us. But they are taught something that they cannot go forward without the arraignment. And that is what we have been successful in doing, is preventing the arraignment from taking place. In anybody, we've got a couple of cases going on. One of them has come to an end, by the way. And maybe Gerard can talk about that in a minute or two. But, you know, what we've done is we do not comply. No, you don't have jurisdiction. Keep challenging them. Keep coming. But we've discovered all of their games, you know. And they keep rescheduling and rescheduling to restart the arraignment, but they never get to it. We have a case up in the western part of our state over in Niagara. We're working with some people up there. And, matter of fact, he's going in on Wednesday, I believe. And we did papers. And, again, they're still trying to get control over this guy. And, he must have been arraigned four times and still hasn't got through it. But that's the key thing.
And they'll do it in a way that you don't even know they're doing it, because they'll offer you an attorney. If you accept the attorney,
right,
it's the same thing.
This
There's
is
all
the
kinds
game
of little tricks that they have to suck you into that. Now, what was the jurisdiction?
Well, let me just finish the point on this, and you can take the mic over, and you can tell us about Ryan.
I'm going to ask you a question on jurisdiction before we go on, but go ahead.
Okay. But anyway, they have this game they play, as Gerard says, they try to give you a lawyer, okay? And they make it for free, because they'll do anything, because they just want you to plead, okay? And then you're done. The other thing they do is they want to have a special hearing to see if you are, what was the word they use, if you're competent, okay? So they do a competency hearing, okay? Of course, meanwhile, the lawyer, the prosecutor is in the background working with the judge, which is a conspiracy, and so on. What we have discovered now, we've been through a couple of these cases, and we see the entire game now. Okay, so we've written one paper, and we'll get it up online shortly. I just been too busy not to get it up. It's done, but I'll go through it and, you know, go through it one more time, and then we'll get it up online. If you ever get stuck in a court for any reason, you give this one paper in, this one jurisdictional paper, and it covers all that stuff. It answers and deals with every problem and puts them in a box, totally in a box. And then all you have to do is just tell them, you don't have jurisdiction. Did you read the paperwork, Your Honor? And we give a plan, a process of what to do, step one, step two, step three, step four, if he continues to push back. But one of the big mistakes we made, you know, you want to shut the judge down. And you want to cut the judge off from talking with the prosecutor so that he's getting educated, or shall I say de-educated, more whatever. You know, he's just more confused. By dealing with the prosecutor. So you want to shut the prosecutor off. This paper does that. It stops the conversation between the judge and the prosecutor. So the judge is on his own. And the thing is, the big mistake we made is we challenged the jurisdiction and talked about it has to be ruled. And so these judges, they look at this and they say, well, okay, I rule I have jurisdiction. And, of course, they can't do that, okay? Actually, what it says is it has to be proven. They have to show proof, okay? So instead of going in challenging jurisdiction and say they have to prove it, we go in challenge jurisdiction and say they're barred. Now, that doesn't give them the option to go for proving it or to ruling themselves. They may try to take that step, but I don't think they're bright enough because really they are that dim. So anyway, it's a process. We figured out. I think we got all the bugs, and we deal with it in one paper, which we will share shortly up online. Gerard, tell the story about where Ryan's at and what's going on.
Before I go into that story, you know, they, if they're a little bit brighter, they may establish what they call, I believe, subject matter jurisdiction, right, John?
And, yeah, they can. They
but they
can
don't establish
matter, yeah.
In personam jurisdiction.
Yes. Those
see,
are two big things. They have to have both.
What's that?
They have to have both.
Right. So they may say, well, we have subject matter jurisdiction, and you have to know what that means. And you have to come back and say, no, but you don't have in personam jurisdiction, which means the ability to hold you on that charge because they've proved their jurisdiction, which they haven't, you know, because they're working out of an admiralty court or whatever the reason. So they... you know, they'll quote the statutes and all kinds of things and say, this is our jurisdiction, or my robes are my jurisdiction, and here's the law, and I'm the law in this geographic. You know, there's no such thing as geographical jurisdiction, you know, unless you're in Washington, D.C. You're in Washington, D.C., and you're a resident there, then I guess they have geographic jurisdiction over you then, the feds, right? So anyway, that's just a point that we've learned going through all of this baloney. We had a case where they took the guns away from this particular person, and it was due to an order of protection. I mean, he went in because he had a problem and he wanted his child back, and they turned it around. And they talked the girl into filing a bogus order of protection. They lied and they coerced her into signing the thing, and they put words in her mouth, and so they came out and they got his guns, and so we immediately started fighting it, and in the course of events, anyway, they took all the guns, and they found a gun with a barrel that was too short, so now that was a misdemeanor charge. But the thing is the only reason they found it is they entered the house illegally on this court order that was illegal to begin with. It was an illegal warrant and everything else. Anyway, long story short, in New York State, when they take your guns away, they never want to give them back. And if you ask their advice, they say, you have to do an Article 78. You got to take us to court and sue us under Article 78, which is kind of a crime that's a policy of these counties, because that means you got to put the money up front. You know, most people have to get a lawyer, and even if you know, you're going to win if they did illegal stuff to get it, but you got to lay all that money out. And basically, you get all that money back, plus you go for damages. So what they're doing is they're using the resources of the taxpayers to discourage you from getting your guns back, because most people can't afford that process. This fellow went through and did all his own paperwork. We helped him, and he did a lot of the stuff on his own. Now, in the course of doing that, you know, he did the Article 78 because they told him he had to. He filed a mandamus and stuff. He found out that in this county, the judge issues the pistol permits, and there was a statute in there that says that you have to have a hearing within so many days. The judge has to give you a hearing so you can answer that revocation of the permit, and they never did it. So he said, you never gave me my hearing. You know, this. Here it is 9 months later. And they said, okay, so we'll give you a hearing. I mean, 9 months after the fact. And he already got the guns out of the sheriff's office by sending them to an FFL just to get them out of the sheriff's hands. He didn't trust, you know, the police holding his guns. So when he put in for the hearing, the judge recuses himself on the grounds that he has a court case against him. Well, the court case he has against him is the Article 78 that he told him to file to get his guns back, which is ridiculous. I mean, this judge is an administrative hearing, because that's what it is with the pistol permit. It's an administrative procedure. So he recuses himself, and they send it from Greene County across the river to Columbia County. And the judge and the prosecutor and all, nobody wants to touch this thing because it stinks. He got out of the gun charge because it turned out that there was another case that went up to the Supreme Court on the same thing, where they went in the house and picked up stuff that wasn't in the order of protection or in the warrant. And that's considered the fruit of a poison tree, and they can't use it. It's ill-gotten evidence. And also, they forced him to open his gun safe up, which basically forced him to incriminate himself. He didn't even realize that this gun was too short. It was a gun that his father gave him when he was 9 years old. It's been sitting in the bottom of the gun thing for years and years and years. So, and actually, there's no intent. I mean, you can get into the intent thing, too. We won't go there. But anyway, they knew that if he took it to the Supreme Court, they were going to lose. So that's why they cleared those charges out. And so now he had the order of protection. We got the order of protection lifted in 2 weeks, got him out of family court in 2 weeks. I don't know who, anybody you know, ever gets out of family court in 2 weeks. You're lucky if you get out in 2 years.
They don't get out of family court till your kids are 21. We got him out in 2 weeks. You're right.
Right. 2 weeks he was out of family court. So now he's out of family court, but he doesn't have his guns back. And he's got this charge. Now, the charge got laid up and laid aside.
In fact, they could not wait to get rid of us. I mean, you saw how fast they went. They pulled all kinds of lawyers and forget about it. You know?
Right. The whole thing was a novel, the crap that they did and the crap that we did and back and forth. And they couldn't wait to get rid of us because they're not used to people pushing back and filing papers. And, you know, we're filing papers up above them, up with their bosses in the Supreme Court, and they don't really like stuff to leave family court and go in the Supreme Court, but we hit them on constitutional grounds, which they don't know how to defend against that because they're definitely operating outside of the Constitution. So they all had a bad taste in their mouth for this, and they wanted to be done with it. So he goes over. The interesting thing is they make a hearing in Columbia County, and he gets this judge, and he goes in there with his girlfriend, wife, whatever she is. And you know, he was like, I don't know why they want to drag this stuff up from the family court. It's got nothing to do, you know, with the thing. I mean, we could actually take the judge of the family court. We could sue him because of some of the stuff he did. But that wasn't the issue we were making. It was almost like they were dredging this up. They were putting this judge at risk because they're pulling the old stuff up. So he gets in there, and they wanted to, you know, and he's arguing with them that I don't need to discuss all that stuff. That just muddies the water. fact is the case is closed. It's sealed. There's no charges. They got the pistol. It was wrong of them to take the pistols in the first place. You need to give me my license back. So the judge says something like, well, in order for you to exercise this privilege, and Ryan says, what do you mean privilege? It's my Second Amendment right to have a gun. It's not a privilege. I'm just cooperating so I don't go to jail. And the judge is rolling his eyes. He wasn't very happy. Oh, the first thing is when he went in there, he asked him, what is this procedure? Is this a trial? Is this an administrative hearing? What, are you a judge? Or are you just an administrative, official? What capacity are you in? So right away, the judge knew he had problems, and he was like, I don't want to get into that. And I think he was pissed that they sent the case over to him because he probably heard rumblings about it, and now it's in his lap. And here's this guy standing there with his wife and his babies saying that you wronged me, and he probably read enough of the case to know that they did wrong him. So, and then Ryan's over there telling him it's not a privilege, it's my right. And the judge seemed kind of adversarial. He was rolling his eyes, and he gets home, and 2-3 days later, he has his permit restored. So I think that judge probably called Greene County and said, listen, don't you ever send me another case over here like this. I'm giving his pistol permit back and send him back to you guys, because he just had a bad taste in his mouth with the whole thing, because they're not used to this. They're not used to people pushing back. So we've kind of cracked the shell over here in Greene County.
Well, let me just add a couple of things to that. Originally, this all started off in family court, as Gerard said. And what happened, and he was the one that filed the charges, not his wife or his girlfriend. And in any event, when she came in, they sided on her side, even though the problem was really the other way around. But they gave her, they sent her to a... some kind of a women's group or organization that helps battered women. And she wasn't battered, though, but in any event, they went to one of these people.
Domestic violence was there in the court, the lady from domestic violence.
Right, and then she went and sat down with these people, and they filled out a paper and had her sign it, and that was the complaint, but it wasn't. There was no notary. There was not a sworn affidavit. And they acted off a piece of paper that was not a sworn affidavit. In order to get a warrant, this made the whole thing illegal. And also the judge did not sign the paper either. They'd used a stamp. And for a warrant, it is required, one, it must have a sworn affidavit, and two, it must have a wet ink signature of a judge. You can't have a stamp. No, the clerk can't just stamp it for the judge, or the judge can't be on the phone and say, hey, yeah, just put the stamp in, click it up. No, he's got to get off his rear end, come down to the courthouse and sign. It's got to be wet ink. So those are the two major things that failed upon him. The other thing was that the paper said that he was to surrender his guns. He was never given that paper. It was delivered by the sheriff, and the sheriff walked into the house and pushed their way in to take his guns. They wanted his guns right then, there, and now. And so there was three problems with that warrant.
They have a ruling that says that they can't hold you in default when they're handing you a piece of when they're serving a warrant, that you're just getting the warrant. They can't hold you in default of that warrant when they're handing it to you.
Right.
In other words, the way it was written, it was, you get the paper and they come in, and it was illegal.
Anyway, it was an illegal warrant. That was a major, major problem with it. But also, again, you're getting back to a statute, the length of a barrel. Give me a break. But besides that, he also had a receipt for that barrel, and that receipt went back and was grandfathered in. So, again, another problem. They never should have taken this guy's guns, and there was absolutely no reason for them to do it. But he did finally win through that process. It was a year of hell. But the thing is this is what we have to do if we want freedom. We're the front line. We have to make the battle. We have to push, and we have to endure. And the people behind us, it's going to get easier and easier and easier until the government fears the people, then we will have liberty. That's what the judges are starting to fear us. I truly believe this. And the prosecutors also. I think in Greene County, big time, and we got another big case going on there, and there's all kinds of criminal activities, and it's right in the face of all things. So these people are nervous, And there was also some conversations that took place, I don't know if Gerard wants to talk about it, with the sheriff and Ryan and so on and so forth. But before we go there, I just want to respond to something in the text chat. I see Joe, Big Ideas, mentioned some things that Article 35, which is, I think it's Penal Code, well, it may be Article 35, whatever they call it, concerns the use of deadly force. I got to go take a look at that and see what we might want to add that into our case. I don't know. But also, he also brings up that the right to bear arms is in even though it's not in the New York Constitution, it is in the New York State laws, and that is true. But again, they're not laws, they're statutes. That's the key thing to that. We know that they can overturn statutes in just a whim, overnight, literally, and they can change things and add to things and so on and so forth. If it's in the Constitution, not so easy. So it really doesn't mean anything in the New York statutes that they have a right to bear arms. It should have been in our Constitution. But the other thing, we do have a federal Constitution, of course, and that trumps all state constitutions anyway, and you can't deny that one. So New York doesn't have a leg to stand on. Anything that is repugnant to the United States Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, is null and void, end of subject. And that, of course, is the main thrust of our court case. But anyway, I don't know if you want to share any more about that case, Gerard.
No, I think that's
good. All right. Anybody else have anything? Question? Comments? We have a lot here. We did talk about the fact that we got our papers back on the from the appellate court, and we sent them back. I got them Friday, and we dropped them off this morning, this afternoon, Monday. So we pushed them right back. And it's a two-week thing for that, for a rehearing, as I mentioned, two Mondays away. So that should move quite quickly into the system. But again, they'll probably drag their rear ends for 6 weeks to give us a decision on that. And we talked again about the sheriff. Yeah?
I think that rehearing paper is a very, very good paper. Everybody should go read it because it's basically simplifies the whole case. I mean, they didn't get their heads around it. They didn't read it. I believe, like John says, they let their clerks do it. I think they let their clerks give them a summary of what it was, and then they kind of looked at what we said, and then they went ahead and told them to write up a thing based on what the case was. I don't believe the judges actually read the case. You know, they kind of skimmed it. But that rehearing basically restates what our position is, and it restates it very, very simply and clearly. And it's like, if they don't get what we're talking about when they read this rehearing paper, they should just pack up and leave town then.
Exactly.
Because it's that clear in that paper.
And we do have their ruling up there, so you can go up and read that ruling. It's four pages, but it's actually like two and a half, maybe at most three. It's not even three. It's two and a half pages.
They repeated a lot of gobbledygook back to us that the party repeats back to us about Article 2, which has nothing to do with an elected committee man. And we have their own words up there saying that this county committee and these people, they're a private association, and they owe their whole existence to statutes, and we don't even see anything in law or in the Constitution of how they should exist. Now, this is the judge's words. Up at the Supreme Court, up at the appellate court or whatever. These are their words.
Let me read one of their paragraphs, okay? And again, this I'm going to read this paragraph. This is in their decision.
And I don't think they read this.
No, they haven't. Now I want to read a paragraph from them that they wrote in their decision, and this paragraph clearly told me they did not read our papers at all. They did not read it. This is what they said. Initially, plaintiffs have never clearly explained what committee they seek to be part of in the position of committeemen. Pursuant to Election Law Article 2, party committees shall consist of a state committee, county committee, and such other committees as the rules of the party may allow. Election law, subsection 2-100. So that tells us right off the bat, what they just said there means they did not read our case, okay, clearly. So I tell you, I really believe that the gatekeepers up there that read this case and gave a synopsis to the judges. And we know that happens all the time. In certain cases, they may want to just take command of, but a lot of cases they push to their clerks. They give me a synopsis on, tell me what you're thinking. And again, they develop a relationship that they trust the clerk, and they trust the clerk's decisions and opinions, you know, after a while. And this is what they ran with, in my opinion. Now, they're going to get a paper, which I think is going to be a big surprise. And I think it's going to be, what do you call it? I think it's going to be a big surprise. Hopefully they'll read it. But if not, we did threaten them with U.S. code, violation of U.S. code, because we were very, very clear. They said we didn't have a cause of action. Well, we've had many causes of actions in the U.S. codes alone. And the fact that interference with an individual in a political campaign, any interference whatsoever, is a federal offense, 2 years in jail, $5,000 fine, plus a civil suit abilities. Okay, that is clear, and that's our cause of action. They interfered with an election. And now they can't sit on that. They just can't. And I don't care, even if they come back with their gobbledygook, GOP, okay, well, now we do have a case against them because we informed them very clearly on our new paper without any, you know, you can't confuse it now. And what they wrote, well, now, you know, ignorance is no excuse for the lawyer, time to go to jail. Do not pass go. Because that judge just became a part of that conspiracy. So we'll go after the appellate court. You know, one of the major problems we have, and again, if anybody has a question, pipe up or a comment. One of the major problems we have that we discovered is that they have changed, and I may have mentioned this before, they have changed our Supreme Court, which is a court of record, a common law court, into a nisi prius court. And that, of course, was done through education. They educated lawyers who, and judges are lawyers, they come from the same school, and they've brainwashed these people to believe that statutes are law, and they are true believers. They are true, true believers. It's hard to change their mind and thinking concerning statutes, mainly because that's how they control things and that's how they make their money. But they truly believe that statutes are laws. Anyway, Mike's open here.
John, this is Hashem from Staten Island. How are you guys?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Hashem?
Very good, thank you. So I understand that there's a second case that is pending somehow. How does that relate to this?
Well, this is a 2011 case. We have a 2012 case. The 2012 case is up before the appellate court for a petition for a writ of mandamus. And that's the big, big battle right here. That's the real big one, because we're telling them that we have a court of record that we have control of. Now, the other thing is the first one, still, we have that shot to go back for re-argument, which we've already filed the papers. We filed them today, so we're in for re-argument. And then, of course, after that, we have the Court of Appeals. And then if after that, we have two or three shots. I'm not sure what the process is, but I believe it's two, maybe three shots up on the federal level. And so we will take this to the hilt just on that one case. We then have the 2012 case, which we will take that to the hilt. We'll take that directly. If this court doesn't understand it, would going for an emergency hearing before the Court of Appeals. And if they can't understand it, and they should understand it, because those are the guys, I think, that really make the big decisions. If they can't understand it, well, we'll take it to the federal level. Now, we know that the federal level understands it because they deal with these things all the time. Whenever you go to a tax court, and believe me, a lot of people go to tax court, and they are found guilty. Oh, my, they're found guilty. I don't think rarely do you found innocent, and they always appeal it, and they always go to the Supreme Court in the appeal, and they always rule for the tax court. The question is why? Why do they always rule for the tax court? Well, the answer is crystal, crystal clear. The tax court is a court of record, and the tribunal, which is the judge or judges that are ruling this case, they actually work directly for the IRS. They are the reflection of them as the sovereign in the courtroom. which of course is upside down and another fraud in itself. But they know what a quarter record is. So we'll get it on the federal level. We also, we're going to do a real big push with the gun lawsuit because we asked, I think I mentioned this, we did ask for a conference, which we'll have in probably 10 days. I'll start to alert people this week and tell them to get ready. As soon as we get a date, I'll put it up there, hopefully as many people as possible. This is really important. Even if you're not on the case, you come up, you know, just get up. Anybody who wants to get on the case, it isn't, you can still go up and fill the paper up. We're still putting people on the court. But we are calling for a conference right up front to lock heads with the judge immediately in the beginning of the case. We want him to understand with no uncertain terms on what his position is in this courtroom, that he is not the judge of this case, that we have a tribunal here, and it's made up of a little over 800 people. May even hit 1,000, but it's made up of 800 people. That's the tribunal that's equal to a jury. And that's where we're coming in. He is the administrator of the court. He's to act as the magistrate to administrate the justice. That's all. He's to take our orders from us. And that's going to be an interesting argument, and we're preparing for that argument, and that's what really the whole focus of the hearing is going to be. Also, these lawyers love to waste time. We're going to make it crystal clear. You're not wasting time in this court. You know, if you think that there is no court of act, there is no cause of action, well, let us be quite clear. We have U.S. codes that have been violated. That's a cause of action. Okay, so we're going to move that real quickly. The other thing is this court is not a court of statutes. It's a court of law. So this is a common law procedure. And if the other side doesn't understand that, well, that's tough. Because if they want to make their case from a position of statutes, they're going to lose because it's not going to have any credibility in the court. So we're going to do something in New York that hasn't been done here before yet, that I don't think, at least not in the past 75 to 100 years. But we're going to make that clash and hit real hard on this court of record. And we will take that with a writ of mandamus under emergency standards, which we know exists now, under an emergency situation, to get before the appellate court to make the right decision. And if they don't, the Court of Appeals, and if not, go to the feds. But we will get our decision, and we will push this court of record, and we will make a big splash and a big stink, and hopefully we can get into the news about this, and people will start to see the fraud. But in any event, this will help all our cases. This will help everyone's case, if and when we're successful with this one point we're trying to push through.
So thank you for this, John. How do you see the timeline or the time frame for the first case of 2011?
Well, we had instructions, it's very clear. We're able to set a date. The date is set for the appellate court to rehear the re-argument for the second Monday from next week. So let's see, the 11th is next Monday, and then the 18th. So the case is going to be heard before the appellate court on the 18th. Now, there's no oral argument unless they call us up there. And if they read this, okay, they may very well call us up there if they're going to be honest with themselves and the people. But they will understand, and again, everybody should go read this case. It's only about 7 or 8 pages, this particular paper. If they read this, they're going to know that we're going to hold them accountable. We're going after them with the U.S. codes, just like we're going after Teresi and Conley with U.S. codes. You know, there's a lot of judges on the line. We're going after another judge in Greene County with U.S. code. We've already sued him. He's in a lawsuit right now as we speak. He was the judge of the case, and he went and broke the law, and we immediately reset the whole case. And we added his name, and he has a lawyer, and is now answering the case, and he had to leave the case, and they're putting another judge there. And I just send those papers in. When did we send them? I think we sent that in Friday or Thursday. Yeah, we mailed them out Friday. So that's moving in another case with the judge. And then we have a federal case if we get moving on, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be moving on it, there's one... Two, I think there's three judges in that, Gerard, right, on that federal case with Ryan, and the sheriff, and a bunch of deputies, and a prosecutor. Okay, so, again, you know, let me tell you, I think they're fearing us, and that's what we want. When the government fears the people, we have liberty. And once the word gets out, then we'll get justice. Go ahead, John.
They'll really fear us when they see that the federal case is filed. Then
yes.
Then they'll know we're not bluffing anymore, you know?
Exactly.
You know, I didn't think you used that one that said they had no vested constitutional or statutory rights, but you
did.
Yes,
I did.
On number nine.
Yes.
And number nine is probably one of the most powerful lines of that paper, because it talks about the members of the county committee, and it uses the appellate court or the appeals, or actually this is the state appeals, the highest court. It uses their words, and they say members of the county committee receive authority by rule and are not elected by people within their election district. The creation of a town party committee, its powers, authority, and procedures are solely the providence of a county committee, and that's for Cisco versus Borden. And they go on to say, the executive committee have no vested constitutional or statutory right to office. Their claim to serve as members of the executive committee must rest upon the rules of the party. Since the executive committee, in common with all standing committee, was created and exists pursuant to the rules of the Democratic or Republican Party of the county, the creation, selection, and grouping of committee men from a town or city legislative districts, whether they are county committeemen or city town committeemen, is a matter solely within the power and providence of the county committee. So they understand that. They understand they're a private association, and they understand that all these people are not elected. Now, where's Waldo? You know, how do you have two parties with no elected? Where's the elected people? Where's the elected position? If member of the county committee, which is what they're giving us when we go in and ask to be committee men, is not elected, where's the elected guy? In order for it to be constitutional, 6-18 says the committee man is elected at the primary by designating position. Where the hell is he? Do they know?
Right.
They haven't even thought about this.
Another question that they had a little bit of a problem with, and by the way, they thought, this particular court thought that they were the elected committee men. That, you know, and that they're elected to different levels. They're elected to a town level, or they're elected to a county level, or even a state level. I mean, all of that, they had no understanding of it all. They were all looking at Article 2, and they haven't read their predecessors' papers.
They acted like we were going in there fighting over party rules, because that's all they get. That's the cases that they get. People squabbling about party rules. When in fact we as far as we're concerned, all of Article 2, which is the party rules, is all unconstitutional facade, because that thing is what they're using to run the party now. It's not unconstitutional as long as there's an elected committeeman to oversee the whole thing. But when you expunge the elected committeeman and you take the subcommittee and you let them run everything based on these rules that they're making themselves and bringing people in and out on by themselves, now it becomes unconstitutional, because now there is no people, you and me, in the picture. Where do they come from? They come from these couple of guys on top that appoint them, and I guess they just don't understand it yet. And I don't see how they can read this paper and not understand it now.
They also didn't understand where. Let me just make this one point. They also didn't understand where we got the title from. And the title was clear again in our paperwork, but we made it clear in this paper that the title came from 1909, ultimately. And they were talking about that this title should be an election law. And the fact of the matter is there are no titles in election law for anything. The election of a position is a logical name. If you want to elect a dog catcher, well, you call him a dog catcher. If you want to elect a congressman, U.S. congressman, well, you call him a U.S. congressman. If you want to elect assemblyman or a governor or a county clerk, that's what you call them. Well, obviously, if you want to elect a committeeman, That's what you call them. And there are, that particular title is used three times in election law in 1909. They've totally removed it from this particular, anything after, from 1911 up to, it doesn't exist. They don't mention the committee man at all. But they do mention member of the county committee, and they do make it clear that the member of the, well, it may not be so clear, but it is obvious to us now, and obviously the courts, that a member of the county committee is nominated at the primary election and voted into power at a meeting. So, Hashem, you wanted to say something?
This is Joe.
Joe, how you doing, Joe?
Good. Say, isn't it also illegal in New York State to hold two elected offices concurrently?
Absolutely, but if they are a committee man, that's not an elected office that they're holding, because they're members of the county committee.
Yeah,
I was
having a discussion about this, and these people were saying, "Oh, but I'm an elected committee man," and I said, "Well, then if you were elected, even though their petition said member of the county committee, I said you're in violation of New York State law because it's illegal to hold two elected offices concurrently. So are
that's
you an elected committee man or not?" And they just got this deer in the headlights look that was amazing.
Exactly.
I also have people that say, "But I'm an elected committee man." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Did you take an oath of office?" They said, "No." I said, "If you don't carry somebody's petition, can they fire you?" They said, "Yes." I said, "I don't think you're elected then."
Anything else, Joe? Anyone else got anything?
Nothing here. Oh, other than the fact that I was going to say I missed last Monday night's meeting because I was at the Chemung County Standing Committee on Corrections and Law Enforcement Committee meeting,
okay. And
it took them less than 5 minutes to recommend that the general legislature send their resolution to Albany opposing the SAFE Act. That
all
meeting's
right,
going to happen a week from tomorrow night, and I think it's going to fly through Chemung County here.
Good. Yeah, it looks
the
like
only
it's going to hit pretty much every county except Westchester.
We get to speak at the general legislature meeting and not at the committee meetings. So what I'm going to do is hopefully I can get to speak, and if I do, I'm going to tell them that I think that resolutions are great, but they're just an expression of opinion and they have no teeth. So
that's
I'm
true.
Going to ask the county legislature to also say in the resolution that they're going to enact laws that will keep the state and the federal agencies out of Chemung County from enforcing laws written after January 1st of this year.
Well, they can't do that. They don't have the legal authority to do that. Only Congress.
You can do that with
power.
Nullification.
That they can. They can turn it around and say that they're not going to exercise or consider or acknowledge any unconstitutional law as the SAFE Act. That they can do. But
yes.
They cannot make a law to trump the state law or anything like that. They can't write a law. They can write a resolution for that and let them know in this county we're not going to apply that law.
Well, they just did it in Pennsylvania.
They can do that. They can say they can't.
Out near Frackville, Pennsylvania, just did it. And, in fact, I believe it's the state of Montana and I believe the state of Utah have now enacted laws that have...
They may have done it, but it is definitely unconstitutional. It's not just illegal, it's unconstitutional, but there is another way to beat it, as I just mentioned. But they are doing anything they please anyway. I mean, just imagine, they got rid of sheriffs in Connecticut, and it's in the Constitution to have it. They got rid of sheriffs in seven counties in New York, and yet it's in the Constitution to have it. These people, we have a guy going to jail on a code violation for putting up a sign, and he's facing, I think it's 16 days in jail. And they, again, where do they get the authority to make? They don't have the authority to do this. They don't have the authority to write law, and they don't have the authority to make a penalty for that.
But, Rhode Island made a law that says that anybody that enforces the NDAA is guilty of a felony, and the reason they can do that,
the state
because,
can do that.
Well, what
the
if I don't want a law that's unconstitutional is no law?
That's what they can do.
Well, no, you could say, I'm making it illegal to enforce this illegal law.
Yes, that they can do. They can make, I don't know how they would make the statements. They don't need to go and do a law. They could do it by resolution. The resolution means that they're acting together and they agreed upon this, and they put the state on notice, we're not going to enforce that unconstitutional law. And
yeah, but what
it,
about
period.
When the state sends its own people in to enforce that law?
Well, you got the sheriff to deal with them then.
Well,
that's the sheriff's job.
Congressman in Rhode Island did. He made it against the law for any state official to enforce that unconstitutional law. And he put a penalty on it. And he said, if you're caught enforcing this law,
Who did this?
This was in Rhode Island, I believe.
A state can do this, but a county legislator cannot.
Oh, right. It was a state Congress. You're right.
Yeah, in the Federalist Papers, I believe it's Federal 33, is it Madison who wrote that one, specifically mentions the fact that counties and states can nullify unconstitutional
Absolutely.
Laws.
Absolutely. That they can do. That they can do. They don't write laws to nullify the law. They just make resolutions and nullify, or they just make a statement and they can put it in the law that anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, and that's null and void because it's repugnant to the Constitution. The nullification is the key to this whole thing. And we started off talking tonight, as a matter of fact, that the people have the power of nullification. We didn't bring that word up, but that's the point, is nullification. You know, just let's just say no. Just say no. You don't have the authority. I want to tell you something. You go into these courts and you tell them they don't have the authority and they don't have the jurisdiction. They get frustrated. They do not know what to do because it's not part of their program.
There's two officials whose job it is mainly to do this. And one of them was the sheriff. It's up to the sheriff because he's the highest law enforcement. He could stop the state. He can stop the federals, the marshals, anybody, the UN, whatever. And that's the sheriff, and that's why they're trying to get rid of him. And the other person was that every state is supposed to have a militia. And the head of that militia, I forget what his rank is, he has the ability to do that. He can even arrest the president. He doesn't need a grand jury indictment or a judge's signature. He can actually convene his own grand jury, and he can arrest any public official, including the president. And that's why they started vilifying the militias, because they were very, very afraid of that. They didn't know what they would do, you know, if that went into it, if the people started exercising that.
And this is why we got to get ahead of the game now. We got to do the sheriff thing. I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that. We have to do another lawsuit. We have to sue to get the sheriff back into the seven
counties. I think it's easiest to do the sheriff. And the reason I think it's easiest to do the sheriff is because Sheriff Mack already won the Supreme Court suit that verifies.
It's also in the Constitution that they have to be elected in every county.
Right.
New York doesn't
that's
have a Trump
easy.
Card to make one for five and then appoint them.
I think if you try to bring the militias back in those positions, actually they're in violation because many of the states don't even have that. You know, if they don't have an organized militia, the very least they have to have is the two commanders that are supposed to run that.
They don't have that, and they even bastardized our armories. They're gone.
Well, you know, if you go out there and you start talking militias, they've created it to be very politically incorrect. And in New York State, you're going to have all them diehard liberals, you know what I mean, screaming if you start saying militia. I think the sheriff is a much easier way. And you know what? In a certain sense, the sheriff is the militia because he can deputize. He can pull anybody off the street and deputize. So basically, that's what your militia is it not? It's any able-bodied man over 17 years old that can
right.
shoot
if
a gun.
If the sheriff needed someone, those are the people he should call or would be able to call. As a matter of fact, the sheriff should probably have some authority in that system in their county in order to organize and help organize and lead them. And those are the people that he should be able to call upon in a state of emergency, is the militia. And but by the way, we put together a new presentation which combines the committee man and the judicial process. So it's the political process and the judicial process. So anybody who wants to organize something in their county and invite us out, we'll come out and give a free presentation. We just put a can up there with, for donations to hopefully cover our gas and expenses. And for Hashem, I don't know, do you know Judy Pepinelli out in Long Island? She told me that there was some group out in Staten Island that wanted a presentation. I don't know if you want to try to connect with Judy and then connect with that group and maybe organize a meeting down there so we can give a presentation.
Sure.
So if you want to do that.
Sure.
If you need Judy's info, just send me an email, and I'll get that to you in an email.
Okay, wonderful.
And anybody else who wants a presentation in their county, just to start organizing, give us a call, invite us out, and we'll come out and give a presentation. Time is running short, as you know. I mean, they're moving pretty quick now, so we need to move quick, too. We need to organize. We need to get more people involved. We need people focused in on this political process and the judicial process. We need people to bring more people into this room, into this group. And anybody who misses, and again, I'm sure everybody noticed by now, you know, we try to give a little bit of an education every single time we have a meeting. We have a focus. And next week we're going to focus in on, like I said, the anatomy of a court case. And that may take a couple of weeks to do. We probably won't be able to do it in one meeting, one presentation. But, you know, if you miss something, you know, you can go out and click on the episodes. You could do that right on our website. I'm sure everybody knows that by now. On the left side, there's a little box that says Liberty Alliance, and you'll see a player there in that box. So you can click on play, or which will play the last one. Or you can click the drop-down box, and you can go back and listen to past meetings or episodes there. All right, anyway, mic's open.
John, how long is the presentation of the combined systems?
Well, I kind of read through it out loud here at my computer to see how long it would take, and it took me about an hour and 5 minutes to go through it. Now, you know, in reality, when you have people and, you know, maybe a little quiet, I try to keep the questions till the end. So I think in realistically an hour and 15 minutes, hour, 20 minutes, and then questions and answers, which could be a half hour, an hour also. So I would say, you know, to be safe side, 2.5 hours between the presentation and Q&A.
Okay. Any, like, which days would you prefer and hours?
It doesn't matter to me. I'll come out anytime you want.
Okay.
I'll come out during the week. It doesn't matter to me. Whatever you set up, I'll come. You know, you just give me a call, tell me when you want to go, and unless I have something planned for that day, I'll come.
Okay. Speaking of Staten Island, I just want to update you that the head of the Staten Island GOP resigned last week abruptly after an internal civil war within the party.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in turmoil now, and like, and that's why I was hoping that the committee man process, you know, would reach something so we can clean the house and start.
Right. Well, we're waiting and hoping, you know, it's all in God's timing. So, I mean, we thought that we'd be moving by now, but we're not. And, you know, we don't have control over that. And so we're just waiting, you know. All we have to do is do the right thing and respond to whatever doors are opened up that we have to deal with, you know, which could be good or could be bad. But we walk through whatever door opens up for us and just do the right thing. Anybody else have anything? I'm thinking of, we'll continue on for a little while, but I think I should end the tape right now because, again, I don't like to let it go too long. It's coming up on about, well, it's over a little over an hour and a half right now. So, all right, let me end the tape. Give me a minute, and then we'll continue our conversations.